The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
If you want easy access to the best doctors you can trust, I think it's time to look at PlushCare. Visit plushcare.com/brain and see why it's so easy to use their app to talk to a doctor when it's convenient for you. That's PlushCare, PlushCare.com/brain. Life presents the toughest challenges. Every day you are faced with decisions that test your ability to express who you really want to be in this world. We're told to keep saying affirmations and keep thinking positively, but what do you do when that stuff doesn't work? Welcome to the Overwhelmed Brain, where you'll learn to make decisions that are right for you so that you can create the life you want now. Welcome to The Overwhelmed Brain. My name is Paul Coliani, and I'm here to help you increase your emotional intelligence so that you can avoid dysfunction, handle toxic situations with grace and ease, and show up as your authentic self. Everything I talk about on the show is my personal opinion and is meant for informational and educational purposes only. Always consult a medical or psychological professional before making any changes that could affect your physical or mental health. So glad you are here. Another week of TOB. Let me get my screen up in front of me here. There's an email that I received that I'm going to read maybe just a sentence or two out of, but it is someone in desperate need for closure. And I've talked about getting closure before on this show, but boy, it really helps to repeat this information because I still get messages like this, and I know there are people out there that don't have the closure they need. And closure comes in many forms, of course. You know, somebody could hurt us and we don't have their apology or we don't have their explanation. And now we're just stuck with this unfinished business feeling. And we go through life wondering why they did that to us. So that's one form of closure. Another form of closure might be you're not sure if you're ever going to get a raise. You're not sure if you're going to die of COVID. You know, let's be blunt here. We're not sure of these things. So this lack of closure gives us things like anxiety, this feeling of constant anticipation. And that's kind of a positive spin on anxiety because we have these feelings that we can't seem to get rid of. So we walk around with this feeling of non-closure, like we have not completed the loop. Like you may have heard it called an open loop. And the open loop is when you are in the middle of something and it doesn't complete. I equate to what happens in electronics. With a light switch, for example, you flip the switch and the circuit gets completed, sending energy, electricity, to the light. When the switch is off, the loop is open. When the switch is on, the loop is closed. You've completed the act of turning on the light. For the electricians out there, I apologize if I am simplifying this way too much, but that's how I think of it, is that you are completing the electrical circuit to the light bulb by turning the light switch on. And so that completes the loop. And the loop part is the second wire that goes back to your breaker panel completes the circuit to give it electricity. Again, I'm simplifying it and I'm really not brilliant in this area, but that's how I know basically how it works. And I see the brain the same way. It's sort of like you want to light that bulb in your brain, which might be You want to find out the answer to a problem by flipping on a switch and completing the circuit. But the problem is you don't have the answer. If you don't have the answer, it's hard to light that bulb in your brain that gives you the answer. So you might walk around with the question. Your open loop could be a question or a series of questions that you don't have answers for. Your open loop could also be emotions. Emotions that you've been holding on to for a long time. Negative emotions that you've been holding on to, really. In the sense that something happened to you or something is happening to you and you have these feelings about it and these feelings aren't pleasant, so you walk around in an unpleasant state all the time or most of the time and you have no resolve for it. I look at that also as an open loop, as unfinished business, a lack of closure. All of these things pretty much mean the same thing in my mind. But what I see that does is lead to anxiety, anticipation, feelings of maybe nervousness and confusion, and can also lead to craziness. You can feel crazy. You can start pulling your hair out because you just don't know the answer. You just haven't closed that part of your life off yet. So you walk around in this open loop state or the state of unfinished business. And then you have this feeling. I mean, you can have unfinished business walking into a room full of people if you have social anxiety. There's unfinished business there because what are you asking? You're asking things like, I wonder if they're looking at me. I wonder what they think of me. I wonder if they think I'm stupid. I wonder if they are making fun of my clothes. This is the kind of stuff that people with social anxiety might ask or do ask. I know they do because there's a lot of things they ask. Or they may not even ask questions. They may just say things like, I know they're looking at me. I know they're thinking about what I'm wearing and they're making judgments about it. Those are still open loops because you don't really know. You don't really know. You make it up most for the most part. I mean, sometimes you do know. Sometimes you know someone is making fun of you or putting you down because they are. You have evidence that proves it. But sometimes or often you don't know, especially in social anxiety situations. You don't know what people are thinking, so you make it up. You assume that's true. And maybe it has been true in the past with certain people. Maybe your dad, your mom, your sister, your brother, somebody along the lines made you feel anxious about what they said in your past, so you generalize that to everyone. You think that everyone must think that because if this person thinks that and I'm supposed to love and trust this person, then everyone must think that. We really hurt ourselves emotionally when we do that because we put ourselves into anxious states and confused states. And what this person in this email wrote, obsessive states. So this person in this email is in a very heightened state of confusion and obsessive thoughts. And the feeling of craziness because she doesn't have, I think it's a she doesn't have the answer or the answers. She doesn't have the answers that she wants. She has all kinds of clues what the answer might be, but she doesn't know the answers. So she walks around in a very heightened state of likely anxiety and fear and other emotional states that are really having an effect on her life. It was a pretty long email, so I'm not going to read it, but the gist of it is I don't know if my husband is running around with this person. I don't know if he is seeing someone at work. I don't know if when they go out to drinks that they're having more intimate relations, except she used more explicit language. And I don't know what to think. I know there are red flags, but I also don't know if I can trust my instincts. Now, everything she wrote, if you're listening to me, you know who you are. And if this isn't you and you can relate to it, you know who you are too. But I think we can all relate to the idea that we don't have the answers. You may not ever have the answers. I just talked about this with COVID a week or two ago. We don't know. We don't know if we're going to get it. We don't know if we're going to live through it. We don't know. And so we get these feelings and these thoughts, and some of us can handle it well. and some of us can't. I tell you what, whenever a financial stress comes my way, like, oh no, this huge bill, or where's the money, or whenever that happens in my life, and this has happened all my life, I feel like shutting down. I feel like I can't handle it. It's just too much. What am I going to do? I mean, this is the initial thoughts and feelings that come to my mind, even though I have a lot of tools. I have a lot of tools to work with, but that fight or flight still kicks in. Oh no, if I don't have any money, what does that mean? Oh no, I can't pay my house. I can't pay for food. I can't take care of my family. All of these fears come in. And I always have to go to my old faithful, which is telling myself, I've been here before. I've been here. I've been in this space, the space of feeling broke and being broke. I've been in that place before. I have to remind myself of that. And the reason I remind myself of that is because I got through it. I'm still here. I'm still alive. I'm still fine. I'm still eating. I'm still getting fed. I still have shelter. I am still kicking. And that's where I go, and I feel better after that. I still need time to feel, quote, good, but I get through it because I remind myself, I was there before. I was in this space before. And what happened then? Well, I had all this stress and fear and anxiety, yet it all worked out. I'm still here. I'm still alive. Of course, my qualifier for working out is being alive. I have very low standards, even though that's a very high standard, being alive. But if I can meet that criteria, then I'm fine. I made it through. That may not be everyone's criteria. Somebody else's criteria might be, I can't be broke. I mean, I remember feeling that way. I can't be broke. There's no way I can be broke because then my world is over. Once I'm broke, this is how the world works. You can't be broke. So don't. And that was my belief. You can't be broke. You can never claim bankruptcy because that's dishonest. You must pay all your bills no matter what. Even if you have to starve, you have to pay your credit cards and your bills. No matter what. For the most part, I still believe that is a good way to live. But when you're on the brink of a breakdown and you really don't have the means to even survive at the lowest level, if we want to look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, where food and water and shelter, having all those things to help you survive, you've got to meet those needs. And so I've kind of made that my criteria going forward when I fear that I won't get through something or that I have stress that comes up about something. It's not that I use this every time. I mean, this is one of the many resources or tools that I use to help me get through an emotional crisis. So, you know, a financial thing comes up, I start to stress out, and what do? I have to think about, okay, I've gone through this before, what happened then? I made it through, and I was able to revive myself and thrive again, and I'm good now. So, here we are again, what am I going to do? Oh, wait, I made it through before, and I lived. And as long as I'm alive, I'm going to try as hard as I can to thrive as much as I can. It's not exactly how I say it, but that's pretty much what it is in a nutshell. You try as hard as you can to thrive as much as you can. That's my belief, at least. It may work for you, it may not, but when I'm in any type of emotional crisis, that's where I'm going to go. I'm going to try as hard as I can and work my butt off until I'm exhausted, utilizing all my resources or finding new ones to get ahead. That could mean a number of things. That doesn't necessarily mean financially, just to get into a more comfortable position. So I'm not stressed. I'm not anxious. I'm not any of that stuff. And that could mean I do things I haven't done before. This person who wrote the email, which you know a little bit about now, is stressing out and confused and has a lot to say. It was a long email, and she doesn't know what to do, and she's crying every day. She said, I wasn't crying every day before, but now I am. And she doesn't know why. I will say this. I think I know why she's crying every day. You probably know why she's crying every day. She can't get closure on what's going on in her life and in her marriage. She can't figure it out, and she doesn't have the answers, and she's suffering. She says she's suffering. She says, I'm a strong, intelligent, respected, independent woman in every other aspect of my life. Therefore, the thoughts and insecurity that follows causes so much shame that I'm not able to talk to anyone except one close friend. She said, I used to cry about twice a year, but now I cry almost every day. That's way too much, especially if it's about stuff that you don't have closure on, you don't have the answers to. She says that I recently found your podcast and I've been binge listening because I'm suffering and I need some help. I'm trying to feel my feelings, but they don't go away. They just drag on forever. They can drag on for days or weeks and they never stop unless my mind is occupied with something else. And every moment that my mind isn't occupied, I'm thinking about this. She said, I'm trying to lean into my feelings. I'm trying not to resist them, but maybe I'm not doing it right. Otherwise, they probably wouldn't go on forever. I have a difficult time even asking people for help. I was even married to someone before that I found out after we got divorced that he cheated on me for the whole time. And in my heart, I knew that, and he always lied about it because that's what cheaters do. He made me feel like I was losing my mind by playing mind games with me. So after that, I promised myself that I would never put up with that again. And here I am remarried to a good guy. He does really weird stuff, though. It makes me suspicious. There are red flags. He's been out with coworkers, and he comes home smelling like what she calls a $200 hooker. And for the last few years, he's been away from home for days at a time. All right, I'm not even going to read you the rest of this because there's so much that's iterated here that doesn't even need to be said, because there's one thing that stood out that I read to you that I just need to bring up because it's a giant red flag on what she says about this person that, as I continue reading, who he really appears to be. The first thing she said is that she's remarried to a good guy. So I'm worried about this because good guys are transparent. Good guys are honest. Good guys make you feel special. And good girls, too. I mean, whoever this is in your life, good people make you feel special. They don't lie to you. They want you to feel comfortable. They want you to feel secure. They want you to know that you are meaningful to them, that you are important to them. And they don't do things that make you feel crazy. They don't want to do things that make you feel crazy, because if you feel crazy, then their relationship with you is in jeopardy, and they don't want to lose that relationship with you. As I read this person's email, what comes up for me is that there's an internal conflict in her that she got remarried to what she sees as a good guy, but I don't see as a good guy at all. And I didn't read you everything. I'm not saying that I'm making a judgment based on what I just read you. There was a lot more, but there's too many details. I don't want to give her personal confidential information away, but there's a lot more going on there. In fact, there's one of the things that he does is a huge red flag, which I can tell you, is he becomes very defensive and very angry if she asks him anything about what he's doing with his time. You know, when he goes out for days at a time, or when he's doing anything that she has a suspicion about. So she'll ask probably a seemingly benign question, like, where were you until 2 a.m.? And he might answer, and she didn't say this, but I'm going to assume, why are you always asking me that? Why do you always ask where I am? Don't you trust me? Let me tell you this. Anyone that acts that defensively and that angry when they're asked a question, you need to have your radar on. That doesn't mean we can't get angry. That doesn't mean, hey, you asked me that question 20 times already. Now I'm getting angry. I'm not saying that there aren't legitimate times to do this. I'm saying when there are other red flags that point to something that doesn't feel right, that a defensive person can often be someone who's hiding something. Again, not everyone. There are real reasons to be angry. But when you connect all the dots, defensive, angry people, especially when they're asked about things that would help the other person feel secure, when they become angry, it does the opposite of making them feel secure. It squashes their security. For example, if you asked a friend or a family or your partner or whoever in your life about the new scratch in your car, and they suddenly just got angry and defensive, why would you ask me about that scratch? I didn't scratch your car. What's your problem? And that was kind of an unusual response for a simple question. You need to be aware that there might be something more there. Now, if they're an honest person, they're going to say, oh my God, I would have told you. I would have told you there's a scratch in your car. Definitely, you know, that wasn't me. I swear, I parked it. And when I got back, I didn't even notice the scratch. But yeah, there's a scratch in your car. And then you can have a conversation. Oh yeah, I wasn't trying to blame you. I wanted to know if you saw that scratch. That's a normal conversation. That's how a conversation should go between two people that at least like each other and trust each other. Because there are going to be times that come up where you might have a suspicion about something, or maybe you don't even have a suspicion. Maybe you just want to find out if they noticed what you noticed. Hey, did you see that scratch in the car? Oh my God, I didn't see that. Was that there before? No. Oh, I feel so bad. I took it out and I parked it in that spot, and that's probably where it came from. Oh, really? Oh, that's a bummer. That's not your fault. I don't blame you. No, I'm so sorry. I shouldn't have parked there. No, don't worry about it. I mean, that's the kind of normal conversation I believe we should have. When somebody's acting angry and defensive, where is that coming from? Why does that have to come out? When you're dealing with somebody who wants to hide a lie, that is a common response for certain people, not for everyone. Some people lie totally differently. But a highly angry or defensive response is the opposite of what needs to happen in order for the other person to feel secure in their question. So to this person who wrote to me, she can't ever feel secure and she can't ever get that open loop closed, because every time she brings up the topic, there's a huge negative response to it and she doesn't know how to deal with it. So she probably shuts down. She probably stuffs it down. Oh my God, I better not address this because he just gets so angry and I don't want to deal with it. So I guess I just need to trust what he says. No, you don't. You don't need to trust what someone says to you. I'm just telling you right now, you don't have to trust what anybody tells you. It's nice when you can. It's a wonderful life when you can trust the people in your life, especially those who are supposed to be trustworthy. But you don't have to. This is the internal conflict that goes on, and this is what she's talking about. She didn't necessarily tell me she knows why she's going crazy. She just doesn't understand why she can't stop crying every day. Let me tell you why you can't stop crying every day. Because you have unresolved questions and feelings inside of you that need to be resolved. They need to be addressed. And like you said, you're trying to feel those things and you're trying to work through them. But the problem is the questions aren't answered. The questions that you have, in this person's case, the questions that she has aren't being answered. So what she probably does is take whatever emotion she's feeling about the question, the fear, the anxiety, and stuffs it way down. And then she holds on to that and doesn't address the question anymore, compounding those negative emotions inside of her. This is how anxiety starts. This is how depression forms. I mean, one of the ways. This is how emotional triggers form. Whenever you stuff something down and don't address it, because you can't or because you don't know how, you end up carrying it with you, and it always turns into something else self-destructive. So she is carrying around a lot of self-destructive thoughts and feelings. And it's not that she's thinking, I'm going to hurt myself or anything. I hope not. But she might be thinking, I must be wrong. I'm not smart enough to figure this out. I'm not trusting enough to trust him to not do things that would be against the relationship boundaries. All of these internal conflicts come up and she starts questioning herself. And this mind game that she's playing on herself is often, if not always, perpetrated by the person that I'm talking about that gets angry and defensive to hide a lie. Those mind games to hide the lie cause you to doubt yourself, But you believe that there's truth to what you're thinking, but those truths are being squashed, causing conflicts to form inside of you. The conflict is, I have this suspicion. But then that suspicion gets squashed by that person's emotional energy. And now I am stuck in this state of suspicion, and I'm also forcing myself to squash that suspicion because I shouldn't be suspicious, according to him. I shouldn't be suspicious, so I'm going to squash that down. And on top of that, I'm going to have doubt about not only the suspicion, but also myself. And on top of the doubt, I'm going to have fear that I'm not a good enough person, because if I was good enough, then he would treat me better. And if I was good enough, I wouldn't bring up these subjects that prove that I don't trust this person. So I'm going to squash all of this down inside of me, and it's going to come out. For her, it's coming out in tears. It's probably coming out in fear and anxiety and all these other thoughts and emotions that she might have on a daily basis, emotional triggers, that she doesn't know what to do with. And even if she did know what to do with, she still doesn't have the answer. That's the gist of her entire email. I don't have the answers. She said, I've read like 50 self-help books this year trying to find an answer. I really don't think there's anything even a therapist could say that I don't already know, or I haven't already heard, read, or tried. She said, I already know why I do what I do. But here she is telling me a scenario that she's in with someone else in her life that to me she can't trust, but she's forcing herself to stay in the situation with a person that she can't trust because she is relying on that person to tell her her own experience. She is relying on another person to define what she feels and thinks instead of relying on what she deep down believes is true. And this is the kicker for her, is that deep down, she believes it's true. But at the same time, she has a niggling doubt. And that doubt comes in the form of the words, what if it isn't? What if it isn't true? I have the feeling that is exactly what she's going through. She's having these thoughts. What if that's true? What if that's not true? How do I deal with this? How do I cope with this? How do I process this? All based on not knowing if something is true or not. I'm going to go over that when we come back and tell you what I do. It has to do with exhausting all your resources. It has to do with working your butt off and doing whatever you can to find out the truth. This is something that she may have to do. I'll talk more about that when we come back, right after this. All right, I'm going to go on to the Plush Care website. Go to plushcare.com/brain. And there's one thing they've done. It's really cool. They welcome the overwhelmed brain listeners. So if anything, I want you to check that out. I love this welcome screen. Plushcare, plushcare.com/brain. It says, welcome the overwhelmed brain listeners. I love how they just get you right in. I mean, this is sort of like walking into a doctor's office and the person that greets you says, hi, welcome to the doctor's office, whatever that doctor is, come right in. They're ready to see you. What? They are right now? Yeah, we're ready to see you. So right when you get to this page, it says, book an appointment. Come on in, book an appointment. We're ready to go. And as soon as you click that button, you're going to see a list of doctors in your area. I'm showing the doctors in Georgia and I'm putting the date that I want to see a doctor. And I'm also looking over here to see if they work with my insurance company. They work with a lot of insurance companies. And this list of doctors has a button that says book. And they also have their profile and reviews, and it tells you how many stars they have. There's a little system that people can rate them, whoever's used them. And all kinds of days and times available. So this is really booking an appointment at your convenience, using their system, using their app. I'm doing it on a desktop now, but they have a mobile app as well. And on that mobile app, you can actually talk to the doctor. This is the coolest part in what stands out on booking appointments and seeing doctors, is that it's a virtual doctor's appointment through your smartphone or computer. You just pick a time that works and you book an appointment right online, just like I'm doing now. You don't have to sit on hold forever. You don't have to leave the house. You don't have to sit in a crowded waiting room and be exposed to you know what. With PlushCare, you can be diagnosed, treated, and even have prescriptions sent to your pharmacy of choice if needed within minutes. Like I said, they accept most major insurance carriers. They're available in all 50 U.S. states, and they really care. They're here to help you by discussing your treatment options, and they're available anytime you have questions. So now, more than ever, you really shouldn't put off seeing a doctor when you're not feeling well. I know with everything going on, it can be difficult to put your health first. So go to plushcare.com/brain. They make seeing a doctor easy. You get to do it right from home. That's PlushCare, PlushCare.com/brain. This is such a step up from the old system of driving to your appointment, seeing the doctor, when a lot of appointments you can do virtually. They offer that and so much more. Check them out, plushcare.com/brain. Welcome back. We were just talking about what it takes to get closure, what it takes to get out of this anxious, anticipatory state of constantly thinking about what you don't have the answer to. I will say this, one of the very first steps you should take if you're in this state of non-closure, open loop, as I like to call it, is listen to any episode I've ever done on obsession. I've probably done about 3 or 4 of them. One of them is actually at loveandabuse.com, so you can go over there and check that out. But theoverwhelmedbrain.com, if you go there and you type obsession, or just the word obsess, actually, because it'll catch all variants like obsessive, obsessing. But type the word obsess, and you will find some, I think, very important episodes to listen to, because obsession is that feeling. I mean, this person who wrote is constantly thinking about what's going on in her life all the time. She can't stop thinking about it. She can't stop feeling it. That's because she doesn't have the answers. She just doesn't know enough. What do you have to do to know enough? I mean, what I'm going to talk about right now is a little controversial. I've talked about it before. If you've heard my show for a while, you've heard me say this. But sometimes you have to take the extra steps to find out the answers. What does that mean? That sounds like I'm going to invade someone's privacy. You might have to. I'm going to tell you right now, you might have to, because there's going to be a state of mind that you're going to be in if you don't have the answers, probably for the rest of the time that you are with someone that you aren't sure is being forthcoming with you. I mean, if it has to do with another person, this is typically what it is. Because in her case, she's with someone that says, you need to trust me. I mean, she didn't say this in her email so much, but this is what I'm getting. You need to trust me, and I get mad when you ask me about this stuff. So she's getting this conflicting information from inside of herself and outside of herself. This is where conflict begins. You have a feeling about something. You have a thought about something. You believe something might be true. That might be a 10% chance it's true. Yet we have this other person that we're supposed to love and trust and respect. So we don't want to question them. So where do we go? We have to return to ourselves. But inside of us, we might think, yeah, but I'm seeing these red flags and I'm having these feelings and I'm having these thoughts and something doesn't add up. You know, they do us a favor by having us return to ourselves, because the first thoughts that you had that made you question anything in the first place are the ones you need to follow up on. Those are the ones. You need evidence to prove or disprove your thoughts or beliefs. You need evidence. And when you don't have any, guess where you are? You stay in a state of limbo. You walk around with this open loop, unfinished business feeling, and you don't know how to get out of it. You feel stuck. You're in a rut. You don't know how to get out of it, so what do? You just continue feeling that way until you get closure. How do you get closure? Closure might require some sleuthing. Closure might require asking questions until you get a damn answer. A little tough love here. But this is what you have to do sometimes. You have to say, you know what? I need to know the answer to this question. I don't care if you get angry and you yell at me. I don't care. I need to know the answer because I'm walking around with these thoughts and these feelings, and I don't have any closure here. So I don't have a satisfactory answer. So I want a satisfactory answer. Where were you until 2 a.m.? They're going to get mad. You know, in this person's case, he's going to get really mad and say, well, it doesn't matter where I was, you know, whatever he says. And if I were in her shoes, I would say, yes, it does. It matters very much. Just tell me the truth. I love that line, by the way. Just tell me the truth. Just tell me. Just be honest with me. Just tell me the truth. Sometimes that's going to work. Sometimes it's not. I'll never forget what my girlfriend said to her ex. She told me about this. She had a high suspicion that her husband was cheating on her, and they had already gone through a lot of stuff. I mean, I think she had already caught him cheating once, and she was ready to get a divorce, but she was giving it a second chance. But she had the feeling, and some stuff didn't add up, and so they were out one night, and he had lied to her about where he was, and she thought that might be the case, that he lied to her. So she finally said, if you want this marriage to work, I mean, this is a great line. If you want this marriage to work, then you need to be really honest with me right now. You need to be 100% honest with me right now because, and here's the best part, I know the truth. That's what she said. If you want this marriage to work, you need to be honest with me right now because I know the truth. I know what happened. So I need to know that you're going to be honest with me about what happened. That is a beautiful setup. It really is. Because now the other person doesn't know what you know or don't know. Now in this case, she actually did know. But you can still use this because this puts the person on the spot. And the only way he was going to save the marriage was to be honest. So he thought that everything was riding on the truth that turned out to be, yes, he was cheating on her. It didn't save the marriage. It caused her to say, fine, you know, this is it. It's over, which confused him. So she basically had to deceive him in order to get the truth. This is one of those ways you might have to exhaust your resources. I'm not saying that this is for the person that has to tell the truth all the time. Believe me, my girlfriend is probably one of the most truthful people I know. And for her to do this, to get the truth, was very difficult, I imagine. But at the same time, her marriage was ending. She was coming to the end of everything. And if she didn't do it, she would never find out the truth. So sometimes you do have to climb out of your own morality and step into a place that you may not feel comfortable in order to get the truth. In my girlfriend's case, she got the truth, and that's all she needed to get closure. It was a painful closure, but it was truthful. This is one of the most important parts of closure, is that sometimes learning what the truth is, learning the answer, is going to hurt. It's going to be painful. But I would rather have the pain of truth than the lies that make up denial. You don't want to carry around the unknown. You want closure. And you might have to take steps to get closure that are outside your own beliefs, your own values, the way you operate, even. She had to do something opposite of the way she operated by deceiving the person to get them to tell the truth. That's a very hard thing for some people to do. Because some people are very staunch in their morals and ethics and legal ways to do things. And I'm not saying you shouldn't be. I'm not telling you to do any of this. I'm just saying that sometimes you might have to step out of the way you typically operate in order to find out an answer. On a previous episode, I talked about, yeah, sometimes you might have to check their phone. Yeah, sometimes you might have to look over their shoulder while they're emailing or texting. I'm not saying it's a good idea. I'm not saying that's the best kind of relationship to have because there's not trust involved. All I'm saying is that when you don't do things that are outside the normal way you operate, you'll probably never find out, which means you continue to walk around feeling crazy. And if you don't want to feel crazy, you either have to get an answer, which might mean asking the other person until they give in, and it might be asking adamantly, or you might have to do something else that because they're not giving you the answer, you might have to find out for yourself. Now, I don't think having a relationship where you do this kind of thing is necessarily healthy. It's not. You shouldn't have to do this in a healthy relationship. I look at the times that you have to do this is when there are a series of red flags that you simply cannot get past. And no matter how much the other person says something is true and you still feel it's false, that you need to follow it up for your own sanity. Well, not only for your own sanity, but for the health of the relationship. If you plan on continuing the relationship, whether it's romantic or a friend or a family, sometimes you have to go the extra mile because you're either going to continue feeling crazy, which brings an unhealthy you into the relationship, or you're going to get a resolution, get that closure, and finally feel good so you can let all of it go, or finally get that painful realization and then move on or discuss it or whatever you need to do. But yes, it does take you out of your comfort zone and often out of your values and beliefs and how you operate to get to a solution sometimes. So again, this isn't something I'm saying go do this. This is something I'm saying that if you are dealing with an unresolved issue and you just see the red flags and you cannot figure it out and it's driving you crazy, you can either stay crazy or you can find out. You can figure it out for yourself. I mean, there are all kinds of things that I could tell this person who wrote the email to do. Oh, yeah, well, when he's gone for days at a time, what could you do to find out where he is? I'm not saying that you should, and I shouldn't even say this now. It's very careless of me to say anything like that. I don't want to be responsible for you going somewhere and spying on him. I'm not saying you should. I'm just saying, if I were in your shoes, I would probably do things that would make me feel not so good about myself. Like, I don't want to spy on my girlfriend. I know she's gone for days, but I'm having this suspicious feeling and I can't get rid of it. If I had to live with that for years and years and years, I think I'd rather just get my closure so I don't have to think about it anymore. Because what happens when you don't have to think about it anymore? It goes away. And suddenly you're in a better place. The obsession's gone. The confusion's gone. The anxiety's gone. You become an improved you. And when that happens, none of that gets in the way of the relationship you're in. But of course, you're going to do all the legitimate stuff, if I can call it that, first. You're going to do all the legitimate stuff of asking questions and really standing up and making them answer the questions. And if they refuse to answer the questions or they get angry or they try to push it off or whatever, then you might have to go into the next level. But the whole point is you can't stay in this unfinished business state. You have to figure it out. I mean, if you're obsessed about it and you can't get past it like she is, you have to figure it out. You have to find out the answer. And the other thing that you can do besides sleuthing and stepping outside your beliefs and values and the way you operate, the other thing you can do is leave the situation. Because if you're in a place that you simply cannot trust, even yourself, about what to believe about someone else or a certain situation, then you need to do both of you a favor and get out of that situation. You need to get away from it. Because you're introducing an element that you're not resolving and is a constant issue in the relationship. I'm not blaming you for this. I'm just saying if you're not going to get the answers that you're looking for and you're not going to find out what they are by all means necessary, exhausting all your resources or introducing new ones, then you need to get out of that situation if you can. You need to move away from that situation because that situation is causing you to feel this way. And if you can't get the answers, at least ones that you're satisfied with, you need to get away from it. Because what are you going to do? Continue to stay in a relationship that you can't trust or a situation that you can't depend on? You can't live in a way that drives you crazy because it will drain you emotionally and mentally and even physically. It will drain you. You will experience a psychological death. I hate to put it that bluntly, but it's going to make you completely dead to the world. It's going to make you numb. It'll probably make you depressed. And I don't don't want you to be in that state of mind. I need you to get out of that state of mind, and you have to move past it where she is right now. She's having all these obsessive thoughts, and she just can't get beyond what she keeps thinking, because probably what she's thinking is true. A lot of what she's thinking is true. And she's described so many red flags. I mean, this isn't just one red flag. Like, he was out late one night and he hasn't been out late for 5 years. That could be one red flag that one time. That's a different story. That would probably be treated differently. That's not something that maybe you have to do some extra sleuthing and spying. And that may not be what I'm talking about here. That's one thing. She has highlighted many red flags, many things that she has probably normalized in her relationship. And because she's so used to his behaviors, that those behaviors aren't the red flags anymore. And she just keeps seeing these things pop up. And she just can't get past these things that pop up. So she hasn't really figured out a way to process or release this stuff. And what I'm talking about today is one of the ways you can do it. Definitely listen to my episodes where I talk about obsession, and definitely do whatever you can to find the answer. You know, let me give you a minor example. I was working for a hospital once. I used to work in IT, and about a year and a half, I was an independent contractor doing my part, building a new hospital. And one of the managers in corporate or another part of the hospital said, "Oh my God, you are a great worker. I'm going to make sure that you get hired on. You're going to be hired on full time, because we just need people like you." I thought, this is fantastic. This is great. So about a year passes, and I keep getting this promise from this manager in this department. And he's like, "Oh yeah, we're going to hire you on. I can't wait. This is great. We need people like you." And I started having these little doubts come up, because they kept saying it, but the project was getting closer and closer to an end. And as much as they said it, they never formally offered it. So the end is coming, a year and 2 months, a year and 3 months, and I get more suspicions. And I would ask again, you know, "You're still, you know, considering hiring me?" "Oh yeah, this is great. This is great. We want to hire you when your contract is up. So let's keep going forward with this." And I thought, okay. So I got the reassurance, but then nothing formal ever came down the line. And so a year, 5 months, a year and 6 months, again, I'm having these suspicions. I'm having these feelings that this isn't going to happen. So I'm walking around a little bit anxious, a little bit in fear, because after this contract, I didn't have anything lined up. And so the project is starting to come to a close. The hospital is going to open soon. And I decided, you know what? They keep promising me that they're going to hire me on full time. So I don't have an answer to that, and I need resolution here. I cannot stand walking around not knowing 100% that this is true. So I decided to corner the manager one day, the manager that was promising this stuff. And I said, "You know, you keep saying that you're going to hire me when the contract is up. I just need to know for sure if that's going to happen. I need to know, what do I need to do to start that process?" You know, I forget exactly what I asked, but I was basically putting him in a corner, saying, "I need to know what to do when my contract ends. Do I come to you and you're going to give me paperwork? What's going to happen?" So I wanted him to lay out the plan. And his answer changed my life forever. Thank God. I mean, thankfully, he answered the way he did, because you wouldn't hear me on the air right now. Here I was in anticipation, thinking that I was going to get this full-time job the whole time, but I had my suspicion. And I finally decided to get the answer so I could get out of this limbo state. I asked him, "What do I do? Do I come to you? Do I get paperwork?" And he told me this. He said, "Well, just keep an eye on the job boards and maybe something will come up." You have no idea how many emotions I went through in that moment. I went from anger to despair to fear. I had all this stuff come up. This is about 8 or 9 years ago, right before I did all this stuff with the overwhelmed brain. He told me, "Just keep an eye on the job board. Something will pop up." This was totally opposite of everything that he was telling me this whole time, keeping me there, trying to keep me enthused. I don't know what his game was. I don't know if it even was a game. Maybe he changed his mind. It didn't matter, because all that mattered to me at that point was that I finally had closure. I finally found out the truth that I needed to find out. I didn't like it. I didn't like what he told me, but it's exactly what I needed to know to take the next step. Because without closure, how do you take the next step? It's very hard. Some people can do it. I can do it sometimes, but I need to know. I need to find out what that next step is. And so when he told me that, I moped around for about 2 days. Seriously, I just went home, moped, came back to work the next day, moped all day, went home, moped again. And I was just thinking, what am I going to do with my life? What am I going to change about my life? Am I going to go get another contract? Am I going to do anything permanently? After about 2 days, I started looking online and trying to figure out what I'm going to do with my life. And I had this coaching background. I just never did anything with it. And I have all this knowledge about human behavior and communication. Am I going to utilize that? So I started looking into creating a blog and creating a podcast. And there's a whole backstory to that. But I got into what you're hearing now, The Overwhelmed Brain. And I appear to be a good fit for it. So I'm going to continue doing it. After 7 or 8 years now, I'm doing this. It seems to work well for me. And I think it's working well for a lot of people that I chose this. But I wouldn't have chosen it had I not gotten closure. This happens so often. You could have closure on something just by pinning someone down and saying, what's the deal? Be honest with me. Let's just take care of this right now. I need to know. Because either way, I'm moving on. I'm going to move on with you or without you. I mean, you may not say that part, but that's what I thought in my mind. I'm moving on with or without you, but I need to know what's going to happen here. And he told me, and it changed my life because that is what I needed to hear in order to take the next step that was right for me. This is how you create your life. You find the answers that you need, even if they're painful, so that you can take the next right step for you. This is why I want the person who wrote the email to make sure that she gets the answers that she's happy with. Because if she's not happy with them, she's either going to have to leave or pin them down and say, you know what? We're not ending this conversation until you tell me the truth. And hopefully he will. But I don't know. I mean, from the way she described him and the rest of the email, doesn't sound like he wants to go there. Doesn't sound like truth is his thing. So I hope I'm wrong, but I don't want to say I'm often not, but I have a good read on people, especially the way you describe those people to me, because I can tell what you're experiencing and what you're going through that tells me the situation you're in. I may not always be right, but at least I can give you direction here, and I hope this direction helps. And of course, my disclaimer is pick your battles wisely. Pick your battles wisely. If he's an aggressive, violent person, you probably don't want to do anything I said, and you probably want to do something else. You probably want to get away from that situation. I don't want you to put yourself in harm's way. You do not have to put yourself in harm's way. And let me just finish with this. Sometimes you won't get an answer. That is the bottom line. Sometimes you won't. And if you don't get an answer, then you have to do one of four things. Accept it and move on. Accept it and move out. Reject it and move on. Reject it and move out. Those are your four choices. How does it work? If you accept it and move on, then you don't think about it anymore. You move on, you say to yourself, you know, I'll never know, so that's fine. I'll just keep moving on. And that's fine. I'll be okay with it. I won't give anyone any grief about it because I've accepted that's just how it is. Some people can do that, and that's fine. I'm just going to accept that's how it is. You can accept it and move out or separate or, you know, if you're not in a relationship, just stop talking with this person or just never get into that situation again. You can accept that you'll never get the answer and you don't have to deal with these people anymore. Accepting and moving on is still dealing with this person, but you accept that's who they are and that's how this will always be. Or you accept it and move out. Okay, that's who they always are and this is how they'll always be, but I don't have to stick around and deal with it. That's two. Number three is reject it and move on, meaning you don't accept the answer, you don't like it, you're still going to complain about it, and you have bad feelings about it, yet you're still going to continue to be around the situation or person that is doing this to you, that is making you feel this way and think this way. That is an unpleasant place to be, but a lot of people that I hear from are rejecting it and moving on. Not moving out, moving on with the same person or situation. You know what? I really hate my job and I complain about my job every single day and my boss sucks and I'm never happy there and they always steal my lunch. I reject this whole situation. I reject all the people in it. Yet, I'm going to stay anyway. If you haven't gotten the underlying message I'm trying to tell you there, what I'm trying to say is the third option, reject and move on, is pretty much a place of misery and suffering. Rejecting what is and continuing to be around that person is you causing your own suffering and misery. I know sometimes you don't have a choice. I realize that. And hopefully you are finding ways to give yourself a choice. But this is why it's important to remember these four choices so that you actually choose one of them. Because some people choose reject and move on and continue to suffer. But the last one can take you away from suffering, which is reject and move out. Or if the move out doesn't apply, separate. Or if that doesn't apply, disconnect from the person or the situation completely. When you reject what is because you don't like it, you don't believe it, it's not true, it still makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up, and you separate or get away or disconnect from the person or situation, what you're doing is accepting defeat. You're just saying, you know what, I can't win here. I can't. I cannot win. I need to take myself out of this toxic situation, whether it's me being toxic in the situation or them being toxic or the situation itself being toxic. If I get myself out of the equation, then the formula for the toxicity can't work anymore. Because clearly it's toxic when I am with this person or I'm in this situation. So when I take myself out of this situation and I don't have that stimuli in my life, who am I then? Because we lose ourselves in these relationships and these situations. When we get into certain situations, in certain relationships, we can lose who we are, and that changes our emotional state. It causes us to be unhappy when we lose who we are. Most people who reach out to me that are in emotionally abusive relationships lost who they were after their relationship became toxic. And because they lost who they were, where they used to be confident, they aren't anymore. Where they used to trust their instincts and feel good about themselves, they don't anymore. Where they used to stand up for themselves and be proud of themselves, they aren't anymore. A lot of us create our own suffering because we continue to expose ourselves to people and situations that are emotionally radioactive. And that burns us. And we continue to show up every day knowing we're getting burned, but believing that it's not coming from the other person because the situation or the person has created so much self-doubt that we end up not following what we should follow, which is our original thoughts. Because I'm willing to bet the person who wrote to me, her original thought when things started happening was something he's doing is suspicious. But as soon as he opened his mouth and said, "You shouldn't believe that, you should trust me," or whatever he said, she then turned it around on herself. So she was right, but then she maybe convinced herself that she was wrong or maybe created self-doubt. And if that happens over and over and over again, you walk around as a shell of your former self. I don't want you to do that. I hope this episode has helped you stay away from that if it ever happens to you or if it has happened to you and you're still trying to climb out of that. I hope this is one of those resources that you can exhaust to make sure that you never do that again or start the journey of healing so that you get out of any situation like that in your life. Thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate you. We'll be right back. I'm going to say my thank yous and my goodbyes and my final words right after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank PlushCare. Go to plushcare.com/brain and get a virtual doctor's appointment today. That's PlushCare.com/brain. I also want to thank the patrons of the week. These are the financial backers of this show. They join the patron program over at moretob.com. And I am so grateful for the following people this week in the program are Alexa, good to see you, Daisy, Julie, a new member. Julie, thank you so much for joining. I appreciate your support. I am grateful. Thank you. Steven, you are one of the original members. I say your name at least once a month. Great to have you on board. Thank you. Clarissa, Brian, Ron, Elaine. Elaine is also new. I'm so grateful that you are supporting the show, and I appreciate all of you. And of course, John, I don't want to forget you. Thank you, John, as well. All of these people are patrons of this program. They support the show financially, just a small amount a month. Some give more than others, and all are welcome. And of course, you aren't required to give to listen. I do not ask for your money, but it happens, and we are appreciative of the money. And yes, of course, we need the money to continue to pay for hosting and equipment and everything else going on here. So we are grateful. I am grateful for all of you, and I will read some more names next week, and hopefully I get to read yours someday. If you find value in the show and you're interested in supporting it, head over to moretob.com. And of course, I thank anyone that writes a review for the show. I try to read all those reviews. I don't read them all in the air, but I do look for them, and I am appreciative of them. Thank you, everyone that supports the show. And thank you for listening to the show, and I hope you gain something from the show, because if you improve your life at all, then you are making a better world, and I love living in a better world. So thank you for doing what you do to improve you and be the happiest, healthiest person you can be. Also, I mentioned love and abuse in this episode. If you go to loveandabuse.com, you're going to find another podcast that I do, More of Me, talking about relationships. Today, we did talk about relationships, but not to the depth that I talk about them over at loveandabuse.com. That is a show about control and manipulation and emotional abuse, and basically all the bad behavior that someone can do to you in any type of relationship. And that behavior is usually hard to define, because emotionally abusive behavior comes in little tiny bullet points in the relationship, meaning a single instance of one behavior may not be seen as emotionally abusive, but a repeated instant of that one behavior or variations of that one behavior over time compound into emotional abuse. And this is why people have trouble trying to define or explain what they're going through to friends and family by saying my significant other or my mother or my sister is doing these things and she's driving me crazy and hurting my feelings and making me feel bad. Somebody might hear that and go, well, that doesn't sound so bad. That's the kind of responses I address on that show, because what you're going through can't always be explained easily. And I try to put it in words that make sense. So head over to loveandabuse.com if you want more of that. And finally, I'd like to thank Kevin McLeod of incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. I think we covered a lot today. I told myself that I would never do another episode on obsessive thoughts, but obsessive thoughts has many tendrils, has many relationships, being obsessed about something, having a continual series of thoughts or images or memories that repeat in your mind over and over again, cause you to not get past them until you're preoccupied with something else. But as soon as that something else is over, you're thinking about them again. That is just such a crappy feeling. I don't want you to feel bad. I don't want you to have thoughts that continually plague your mind and you can't get past them. I think it's important to address the negative thoughts and feelings that come up inside of you, and definitely don't push them back down. I mean, there are times where you have to. Yes, you're in a situation where you definitely can't address the thoughts or the feelings that you're having, so you're going to push it back down and you have to deal with it later. I think we all go through that. There are times that at least most of us will go through that. There are some people that will address it right away. There are some people that are just so upfront and so direct, and they can handle it right away. It's like some people will argue right in front of you I mean, like a couple that you might know. They'll just argue right in front of you, and they'll just have it out, and you're just uncomfortable going, whoa, I think I'll just wait over here. I didn't know this was going to happen. But then they finish the argument, and they get along again, and you wonder, wow, aren't they mad at each other still? Don't they still have a grudge against each other? And you find out that, no, they were able to release it in that moment. They were very direct. They just spoke their mind, and they expressed themselves. It may have been a little bit socially awkward for everyone else and maybe even them, but they did it and they got it over with, because there are some people that can be direct like that. There are some people that just get it out and they're done and they're probably happy. I've known people that have had major arguments right in front of me, but they are still together. You know, romantic couples are still together. There are people that get along this way. And that is one of the ways they get along, is they put it all out on the table. I don't recommend that. I think that there is a time and place to do this. I mean, I recommend putting everything on the table, but not in front of other people. So there is a time and place to do this, yes. I don't recommend it doing in front of other people, because you might frighten them. Not everyone's ready for directness like that. And not everyone knows what your capabilities are. I mean, maybe you're capable of hurting someone, so they don't know that. If they've never seen you that upset before, they're not going to want to be around that. So they might back off. I would back off. I'd be like, oh my goodness, okay, I'll just wait until this is over. So there are people that are more direct. They're far and few between. But there are those that should be direct. There are those that should be more direct. Again, maybe not around other people. Just take it in private. Talk to this other person in private and be very direct. Look, what you just said was very offensive to me. It was very disrespectful and I didn't like it. So I'm telling you right now, that can't happen. When you embarrass me in front of my friends, that is wrong and it hurts. And see what they say. I know this is honoring your personal boundaries. This is standing up for yourself. This takes work. This isn't something that you can confidently walk in on day one and say, this is who I am. And if you treat me any less than that, then I'm going to have a problem with it. I'm not saying you have to do that. And hopefully you don't have to do that. Hopefully people just show up as, quote, normal, so that you don't have to deal with that side of them, because they don't have that side of them. If they don't have that side, then you get along and it never has to be an issue. But when it is an issue, when there's some sort of disrespect or someone's trying to take your power away by controlling you or just being nasty towards you, sometimes you have to stand up and say, sorry, that's not going to happen. I can't have that in my life. Not everyone can do that, not on day one at least. It does take work. It does take time to practice that in small ways. Like when I was starting to practice my boundaries, I had to practice it in small ways, but I did take quite a few leaps of faith. I took some big leaps of faith. Like I would tell my boss I didn't like the way he talked about another employee. So I spoke up and said that. I mean, this is when I was working 10 years ago or so. And he stopped. I think there were two bosses in the room, actually. They both stopped and they looked at me. And one of them said, that's exactly what we need to hear. That's exactly the kind of feedback we need. I remember them talking about an employee and I had enough. The employee wasn't in the room and they were talking down about him, and I just had to step up and say something. And it was another moment that changed my life, because I realized I survived. I lived through that moment. I made it. And that gave me the strength to do it again and again and again. Sometimes the first step is the biggest step. Sometimes the first step you take will be the hardest step. But the good news is, it gets incrementally easier from there. I'm not saying it's ever easy. I'm just saying it gets easier, or I should say less difficult. It'll get less difficult, because the first time you think something is going to go terribly wrong, it could. I've never experienced terribly wrong when I've stood up for myself, honored myself, but I might be different than most people. I might be around safer people. I don't know. I was around people that I thought were dangerous, and when I stood up for myself and honored my boundaries, they turned out to be not dangerous at all. So I made up in my mind how they would respond, and I was wrong. It happens a lot. We do that to ourselves. It happens a lot. Thank you again for joining me. Let's just close the show right now by me telling you to always keep an open mind. This helps you step into your power so that you can create the life you want. Make sure you're always taking steps to grow and evolve, because you are powerful beyond measure and you have the ability to do it. Sometimes you just have to reach in and pull it out. And yes, it can be scary, but that's part of growth. You are powerful. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.